The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Well, good afternoon again, everyone. I'm sorry for those of you I can't see. I'll try to move and lean so I at least can see everyone. It really is, like Femi said, such a privilege to be able to carve time out of our lives, an entire afternoon to sit with ourselves, our minds, our hearts, and get to know them, their habits, their energies. What we're doing is looking at our lives through the lens of Dharma, not solely the stories that we know happen in our minds. Maybe you know them very well. For me, they sometimes proliferate my mind. So I was hoping today just to share with you my practice, what I've learned as a meditator, what's worked for me, what hasn't worked, and how I've used these teachings to be kinder, mostly to myself, but that definitely radiates outwards to other folks that I know well, and some folks that I just pass by chance and have a space for a little more kindness for them. I have to be honest, though, when I first started meditating, my interest was not in getting to know my mind. I think it was kind of like Shalanda shared. I was trying to clean some stuff up, move it along. I knew my mind pretty well, I thought. It was critical, self-conscious, judging, controlling. I knew it. I had been watching it for some decades, and it was time to whip it into shape. Enough with watching. It's like acrobatics sometimes. It was just exhausting. Thinking, planning, remembering, scheming, strategizing, fantasizing, embellishing a little bit sometimes, narrating, rehearsing, preparing, commenting, recalling, calculating. That's before breakfast. But despite all that activity, like, the mind wasn't in balance. It's just out of shape. All of those controlling thoughts about what I can do to make things differently, I learned that inherent in those thoughts was the belief, this deep core belief that there's something wrong with the way things are. There's something wrong with the way I am right now. And so all of my efforts tightening to control, manage, were out of that place, out of that sense of deficit. Something is wrong. I'm missing something. I don't have enough. What I guess call the promise of my meditation practice is that, like, I've learned how to relate differently. All that stuff still happens in my head. What I'm learning is, like, how to relate differently to those old tapes. They're so old. Some of them are just like 8-track tapes. I got vinyl in there. But how to relate differently, like acknowledging the conditioning that has resulted in those tapes, and trying to approach the mind, my heart, with a little kindness, some patience, compassion. And when I'm able to do that with myself, I'm better able to do that with other people in the world. With the crabby barista who still made my coffee perfectly, but was not as kind as I thought they should be or what I wanted. Or with my mother, who is never as kind as I want her to be. But if I can hold myself with some patience and compassion, it makes me a little better able to do that with others. With the knowing that it doesn't dissolve those feelings and frustrations. It allows me to open to what actually is happening without expectation, without demand. So this practice calls us to look at all of that, look at our views, not necessarily or exclusively for their content, but just as events in the mind, sort of watching a movie. You know, I know I get swept away. I had a teacher say once, I was sharing just the barrage that was happening in my head. It's like, wow, you're solving problems that don't even exist yet. But it seemed really like useful and productive. But yeah, just got swept away and didn't question it. Just hopped on the train and went with it. So meditation for me has been a way of exploring, learning, just new ways to prevent those old tapes from playing so long and so loud. So they don't always go away entirely, but they don't always have to play so long. Like, if you know, you hear the first couple bars, you're like, yeah, I know where that's going. I don't need to go down that road. It leads to an afternoon of ruminating, and then my mood is gray and sullen for a week. And that's present moment awareness, like to notice in the moment, like, oh, honey, you're going down that path. You're starting to beat yourself up. It's not about that path disappears and altogether. It's seeing it and being able to respond to it differently. So the script that I'm working with right now, right here, right in front of you, is... I am a terrible public speaker. I get so nervous. I forget what I'm going to say. Who am I anyway to be sitting up here talking to you about my practice? And I've even like adopted some tricks to help me work through that. I write myself little pep notes. I practice my pep talk, not this talk, but my pep talk. Remind myself that, you know, you have something to share. You have a practice. Someone may get something out of it and others not, and that's okay. And yeah, it's all right to be nervous. You could push on through. I even enrolled in Toastmasters. So I was like, this has got to go. I used to sweat profusely when I was nervous. I'm so happy that doesn't happen anymore. It might. Watch it. I'll break out in a sweat shortly. Yeah, so I even enrolled in Toastmasters just trying to get a grip on it. But what I was trying to do was change what was. Like, I didn't want it. That had to go. I remember being on retreat once. And seeing with such clarity, like it was the very first time, like all of the gymnastics of my mind. Like criticizing, denying, assuming, speculating, judging, imagining. Like it was the first time I had realized that. And if you've ever been on retreat, a lot of stuff bubbles up. Just even, you know, in a couple of hours of silence like today, there's so much space. You have memories that maybe, you know, we crowd it out with distractions. And so retreat can be a really rich time of seeing clearly. And that does not in any way always equate to pleasant feelings. So when I was on retreat and all of this was bubbling up and I was hating it, I wanted it to go away. I was sick of it. I've been this way for 40-some years. We need to figure something out. It's got to go. Went into my practice meeting with the teacher, basically asking for step-by-step instructions on how to not be this judging, critical person. And bless their heart. Sat with me and talked about like relating wisely to what's happening and pointing to, you know, being a living being has its own pain and experience. And all of that hating and judging that I was doing on top of the pain was just like the second arrow. So there was already an arrow to the heart of just living. Like that's a given. It's going to happen. But that second arrow doesn't have to happen. That's totally self-induced. So the teacher talked to me about relating wisely to what is happening. And that doesn't mean this passive acceptance. I think that's what gets confused about this practice sometimes. It is about changing internal processes. Many of us are socialized, conditioned to change external processes. That's that if only, right? If only my mother would, then I could be more happy, or we could have a better relationship. If only the folks at work would be open enough to having a particular conversation, our work environment would be whatever. And we often have very little control, some influence a lot of times, but very little control over external conditions and circumstances. So what we can do is bring a genuine interest and curiosity to what's happening in the mind, which when I first heard that, I'm like, I'm not really sure what that means or how that works. Like, A is happening, I think B, C is what needs to happen next. Like, that's how my mind worked. But to really be curious and interested in what is arising in this moment right now. My ears are hot a little bit. I can feel my heart beating. Like, those are some of the things that tell me that I'm nervous. But it's not horrible, which is the story that I've had. It's insufferable. It shouldn't be. And so watching the mind, feelings that arise in that way, it certainly doesn't make it go away. Said that before. The path is still there. But what's interesting is that I soften to that thing that I have been judging so harshly before. And a little bit of kindness seeps in, some compassion. Oh, honey, you are nervous. It's going to be all right. You're going to get through it. Your sister's going to nod and smile. It's going to be all right. And so when we can slow down and tune into what's happening right now in the mind, in the body, and that's huge, in the body, like the walking meditation. What does the experience or the exchange, what does that feel like in the body? And it absolutely requires a slowing down. There's no running through it. But when we can slow down, we can recognize those unskillful states, all that judging, that mean girl voice in there, criticizing, doubt, fear. And we can extend some compassion and patience to those states as well. And we can inquire, like, is what I'm doing right now to bring about happiness, or am I trying to push something out? Am I just trying to shut some shit down? so I and earlier in my practice, I wanted sort of the perfect conditions for meditating so I could get all this done. A lot of work to do, a lot of stuff to clean up, lots been happening. I wanted on the cushion, I wanted to be calm and clear, and of course, you know, some big insights, not every sit, but every once in a while, and off the cushion as well, you know, want to be calm. I don't want to be swept up in other people's drama, or even my own drama, have some clarity, and feel safe. Like, that was something that came up for me, this need to feel safe. And the mind, it constructs stories and meaning in an effort to create a sense of safety or a conceptual meaning of safety. And I've been asking myself, like, are those stories effective? Does that really lead to safety? Does it support me in knowing what's coming, what to be prepared for? So I serve on the board of directors here at Common Ground. I'm the board chair. I'm closing out, I think, my first 3-year term. So it's been some years. And for a few years before I started on the board, Mark Nunberg, the guiding teacher here, started courting me to be on the board. And I had numerous reservations. And one of them was I was not interested in being the only brown person on the board of directors. Until before that point, the board had always been all white. I wasn't trying to be the token, real or perceived. Wasn't trying to represent the needs and interests and opinions of POC for the rest of the white board. And so I sort of made a counter offer that there had to be at least one other person of color on the board. My interest was that there I would have an ally. Now, there was some faulty thinking in there because I assumed that my ally and I would always be aligned. That we would, you know, it's totally delusional that we would have similar backgrounds, experiences, perspective, and be able to always be aligned. Y'all see it clearly. I didn't. But it's, so it didn't turn out to be the glorious, harmonious experience that I thought would magically happen by having two brown people in a space. It absolutely has been transformative for the organization. And I have learned a lot and built strong relationships with folks. But it's those questions like, oh, I had that story that this was going to fix it. This was going to make it better. This was going to prepare me. I would know what to do and say. And so I keep those questions, like, just to check in. Like, what is it that keeps me in a space that I sort of create those stories and then just keep playing them? The Buddha teaches a lot about all the things that get in the way of our practice, of our being able to see clearly. He has a top 5 list, the hindrances. So wanting things to be other than they are, wanting more of the things that we love, having agitation around the way things are, or just like dullness. Someone said, I'm not numb, but just this dullness. And then just doubt, like, is this working? What is this about? What am I doing? And so I feel like I always have a combo package of two or more of these hindrances that get in the way. And sometimes I just add another one. Oftentimes, I'm aware of my attachment to particular views, which I certainly had joining the board of directors. You know, this is a group of white folks. They don't know anything about brown anything. I'm going to have to school the board. Like, I had this whole elaborate story that wasn't necessarily accurate. And it brought me into the board, like, already posturing, like, already positioned. So, like, the hindrances overwhelm our awareness and capacity to discern what's good for me, what's good for you, just what is. So, like, what to do about it, right? I think we, in the opening circle, we shared a lot about where we are challenged, like, how to manage that. So, wise effort is sort of what I've been describing. It's how we relate to, or that's wise view, how we relate to that which is real and true, that we can't change. It just is. And we can apply some effort. We do. Sometimes it's skillful, sometimes it's not. Wise effort, the Buddha teaches, is about avoiding some of that unskillful response, or at least minimizing it less frequently, and developing and maintaining some more useful, skillful qualities that don't leave a residue in the heart after a conversation with someone or an exchange. Like something that actually sets us free. So it's our work to keep the mind from getting out of balance. Like I said, why go there? I know I can't change what happened. I know where it's going to lead. Ruminating and worrying and just hurtful self-talk. The Buddha says if we cultivate what he calls the highest mind states or the highest attitudes, we actually cannot simultaneously be crabby, negative, mean. I love that the Buddha says, you don't have to believe me. Come check it out for yourself. I've been checking that one out for a minute because I'm like, I feel like there's some days when I'm crabby and I'm offering loving kindness to people. I think that. I have not gotten a whole lot of evidence of that actually happening. And the Buddha says cultivating these mind states reduces our emotional reactive states. And they are, and I'll just say them quickly. Unconditional friendliness. The Pali word for that is metta. It's often translated as loving kindness. And it gets confused. Loving kindness gets confused here in the West because we associate romantic love with love. So when we say we should have unconditional loving kindness, sometimes the mind goes to, but that person did such and such, and you want me to love them? And it's not about the romantic love. This friendliness is simple kindness. Relating with kindness, compassion, being able to meet someone else's suffering, with kindness is compassion. Mudita, happiness for someone else's happiness. I love that. I've just started saying it when someone is like just excited and bright for something that's happened in their life. Like, I am so happy for your happiness. Because I know there have been times in my life I've been like, they don't deserve that. Or, why can't I have that? Why can't I have that? Why them, not me? Like, just show up for our fellow human being and be happy for their happiness. And equanimity. Which, you know, that'll be my practice forever, I think, being with things the way they are. Because I have firm ideas about how things should be, and it's often not the way they are. The Buddha said, just be with it. Learn how to not make anything out of anything. So I think I have time to read a quick something. So this is from Ajahn Lee, who is a monk in the Thai forest tradition. Oh, here we go. For the most part, we're really ignorant. We try to remedy the things that shouldn't be remedied, and it just doesn't work, because there's one kind of stress that should simply be observed and shouldn't be fiddled with at all. Like a rusty watch. Don't polish away any more rust than you should. If you go taking it apart, the whole thing will stop running for good. What this means is that once you've seen natural conditions for what they truly are, you have to let them be. If you see something that should be fixed, you fix it. Whatever shouldn't be fixed, you don't. This takes a load off the heart. So, I'll get it done. So, this effort, inquiry, investigation, like I said, is not at all passive. It's about getting involved and making effort. It's an active investigation into what is happening. So, thoughts in the body. And sometimes some of the questions I like to ask myself is, how have I treated these habit energies? So am I just beating myself up all of the time? And how have I suffered by my own response? Is it just second arrow, third arrow, fourth arrow? Like, where is the kindness? Where is the healing? And what is this asking me to let go of? So I have time to close with one thing. What I find is a useful frame. So the Buddha taught that there are five things that lead to awakening, and awakening being freedom from stress, suffering, the unsatisfactoriness of life. And one is admirable friends. And here we are. Friends who are in the Dharma, friends who you can open your heart to and share your practice, what's working, what's not, hear from one another. And living a moral life, sila. So our words, our speech is so powerful. Straightforward intention to use our words kindly, honestly, not be divisive or harsh. Harsh is what I'm always working on. And then responsibility for our actions, wise action, including our livelihood. Is our livelihood one that causes harm to beings? Hearing the Dharma. Here we are. Maybe you heard something today that was useful for you. I hope so. And making that effort. So not being passive, but investigating, inquiring, abandoning what you've learned is not skillful. And practicing more with skillful intentions. And just awareness that everything is impermanent. Everything. This too shall pass. My crabby mood will pass. My nervousness will pass. my excitement about my new car will pass. And can we meet all of that with openness? It does not mean total unquestioning acceptance. It means seeing what is happening for what it is and relating to it in a way that leads to an opening and joy in your heart. I think I'll stop there. We're going to go into small groups. So why don't we, is everyone here except Femi, why don't we count off by four? And we'll start with you, Baba.
One.
Okay, so each of us, Meski, Femi, and Gabe, and I will meet with a group. Why don't we do one and two in here? You want to be one, two, three, four? And are they still meeting in Mark's office? Why don't we see if we could do three in here, one, two, and three. So pick a corner and maybe sit close together and talk. And then four, I hope you're the hardy people. It's a little chilly down there, so if you need to bring a blanket or your hat, that's fine. But before we break out, I do want to just read the question. The facilitators, each of us will have the questions, but just as you make your way to the space, something to ponder. And you don't have to answer all of them, whatever resonates with you. What would support me in leaving behind the familiar habits of the mind, the stories? In both meditation and daily life, how do the hindrances limit your capacity to be mindful and wise? And on impermanence, what do you experience once a desire has been met? What are your personal attitudes toward aversion? What beliefs do you have that justify aversion? And is any part of your life challenged by your meditation practice?
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.